so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in, and a very happy Thursday to you. Well, this is our edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We are on our second hour. I got to tell you, we spent the whole first hour, we didn't take calls, we spent the whole first hour talking habits, good and bad habits, and the physiological and spiritual implications of going after one habit, bad habit, and turning it around. Oh my goodness, it was such a good conversation. When the podcast is up, you're going to want to hear it if you've just tuned in. But now we'll take your calls and take your individual questions around your specific health issues. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. During the break, our producer Matt refused to believe that chips and dip every night was a bad habit, Dr. Troy, but maybe we can move right on. So let's just jump into some of the questions and calls that came in earlier. They weren't able to stay on hold, but an anonymous caller, Dr. Troy, called in and said, define autonomic and what can be done about it?
Well, autonomic is part of our nervous system. It's just a way for us to classify a particular area of the nervous system. And there's two parts to it. One's called the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. But the best way to relay that information is the sympathetic deals with the fight or flight stuff, and the parasympathetic deals with the rest and digest component. So you generally don't do both at the same time. You can be in fight or flight or rest and digest, or basically going from one to the other. So anytime there's autonomic dysfunction, it means there's an imbalance between how the sympathetic and parasympathetic are working, and generally one is dominating over the other. And there are multiple reasons for this. There can be anything from lead poisoning or copper toxicity or severe mental stress or a trauma is causing them. So there's a regional pain syndrome neurologic disorder that's a sympathetic-dominated disorder. The brainstem helps to regulate the autonomics, which control a lot of our organ function. So there could be challenges there as far as autonomic dysfunction. So the autonomic part of the nervous system is a reflexive part that's crucial. We need it for survival.
Interesting. All right. So Anne checks in and she says, I have difficulty taking a deep breath, not shortness of breath, really. It happened a couple years ago. I had a chest x-ray, then showed nothing, and it went away. I'm healthy, not on meds, recent blood work good, working with a nutritionist, and I'm 15 pounds lighter than last time it happened. But what could it be?
It's a really good question. Let me just go through a few thoughts on some functional stuff. Generally speaking, we shouldn't have a lot of distension or pain underneath our ribs. So if you go right into the middle, just below the sternum, into the abdomen, and just go off to the right under the right ribs a little bit, there should be no pain there. If you push under the left ribs a little bit, there should be no pain there. Now, occasionally, our stomach can get caught up on the diaphragm. So if we eat too fast, kind of like we were talking before, eat too much, or we exercise too soon after eating, sometimes or if we get constipated or backed up, the stomach can get caught on the diaphragm and it can feel like labored breathing, meaning it's hard to get that deep breath. So generally speaking, your medical doctor, chiropractor, physical therapist can pull down the stomach. It's called a functional hiatal hernia. It's not the same as a surgical hiatal hernia. It's a functional hiatal hernia, and it is a 3-second fix because you can just breathe normally afterwards. You literally feel the difference right away. It can be a little tender or sore there because it's stuck. The other thing is sometimes if you have a sluggish bile system, that can cause a little imbalance there, and an infection can also do the same thing, like Helicobacter pylori is a common stomach one. So it'd be more upper GI types infections. But if it just comes and goes rarely like that, it's almost always a functional hiatal hernia.
Interesting. All right. Let's see here. Michelle's checking in, and she says, I have an overgrowth of candida. How do I get rid of it?
Yeah, so that can be very, very challenging. Basically, sugar is the big culprit there. Excessive antibiotic use has been known to cause that, or exposure to antibiotics. And you have to follow a candida-specific diet, which there will be very, very few sugars in that diet, if any at all. And you can Google that, candida diet. There are a couple out there. There's a couple variations here and there, but generally speaking, they're close to the same. And then you need to take some type of anti-candida, either medication like Diflucan, that's by prescription only from your doctor, or some natural antifungals that can help kill off the fungus, the candida, I should say. And so I rarely see people with severe, significant candida problems be able to treat it just with diet or just with the supplements. Sometimes the Diflucan can take care of it by itself. So I really encourage people to do both the anti-candida diet and then find the either the botanical, nutritional, or medication that works for them. But it does cause significant disruption in normal function. We don't ever see severe infection causing severe disease, but it quality of life stuff, it's just can really, really throw a wrench into how you feel.
So some of the symptoms would be of somebody who's got, and maybe they don't even know they've got symptoms, but they don't know what the core issues are. What would those symptoms be?
Well, they're all over the place. That's one of the challenges, because for years, candida diagnosis became well known in the 70s. And then it really got overdiagnosed because it's one of those, it's like fibromyalgia where you really feel everything. But I will say brain fog is the number one thing that we see. Fatigue is another one. Some people have really sore muscles. Some people don't have any soreness to their muscles. Flu-like symptoms is the best way to say it, that don't go away. So it can mimic low-grade chronic fatigue. And the brain fog is really the biggest one that we see.
And possibly that could come from overuse of antibiotics, a high carb sugar type diet.
Yep.
And you might be thinking, I don't eat a lot of sugar, but if you have a lot of carbs that are simple carbs, right, that break down, that's still sugar.
Yeah, and right. If you overeat your carbs, then if they're not being stored as stored energy right away via the liver system, then they'll also be there to feed. Or if you're not digesting food down, then the same thing can happen.
Interesting. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. You can call with your question. If you want to be anonymous, please feel free as well. 877-93-FAITH. We've got Yvonne checking in from Coon Rapids. Hey, Yvonne, you're on the air.
Thank you. I have bursitis in the front part of my hip. I did have it on the side, and I had a cortisone shot, and it helped. It didn't take it away. So now I have in the bursa in the front part, more, I guess, closer to the groin. And I'm wondering, is the cortisone shot the best treatment for that?
Yeah, so cortisone shots are good at taking the pain away. And if the problem has been addressed, then it generally won't come back. And most doctors will recommend that. A lot of times they'll recommend the cortisone shot and physical therapy. I'm in the boat of if you get the cortisone shot and it doesn't take it away fully, that means there's probably something else going on in there that's creating an inflammatory reaction. And so going to see someone who can assess that part of it, a physical therapist, chiropractor who works with muscles, identifying what might be setting up that imbalance. If the muscles all around the hip joint are not balanced properly, then you're going to get inflammation within the joint. If sometimes there's an internal referral, for example, intestinal inflammation can actually set up weaknesses in the hips, which then when you use the hips can set up the bursitis. So a lot of success has been done by cleaning up the diet and doing physical therapy or the muscle work. And then if you've done PT, chiropractic, or muscle work, cleaned up the diet, and it still doesn't do it, almost always there's going to be a surgical component to that, and that will be up to the doctor who's giving the injection as to whether or not you're a candidate for surgery. But we always try and avoid surgery as much as possible. For bursitis, you rest it, and if the joint is completely balanced and there's nothing interfering with it, the pain will go away. So I would encourage you to look at getting it assessed to make sure the muscles are truly balanced all around the joint, and that will help the cortisone shots last even longer. Generally speaking, you get about 3 months from the shot, and if it's all been addressed and it's good, pain doesn't come back.
And to look at her diet, maybe some core things would be gluten, corn, soy,
food
dairy.
Sensitivity is a big part of that, can cause intestinal inflammation, and then caffeine and sugar can also irritate the ileocecal valve and the middle part of the intestinal tract, which is known to shut down your hip flexors when inflammation becomes too high. If you put a little pressure just to the right of your belly button and there's any type of pain there, it's close to the appendix, not searing pain, but just discomfort, that's a good sign that there's some level of inflammation in the intestinal tract, which might be shutting down some of the muscles. And so we do see the intestinal stuff play quite a big role into our hip flexors. And take this for what it's worth, there is a known corn sensitivity. If there's a family history of hip surgeries or hip replacement, many, many times there's a familial tendency towards being reactive to corn.
Whoa.
And that's causing the actual hip inflammation too.
So. Amazing. Wow. Okay, we're going to grab Barb's call, but we're coming up close on our quarter hour break. So I'm going to have Barb ask her question. Maybe you can kind of tee it up a little bit and we'll pick it up on the other side if necessary. Barb's checking in from Madison. I'm going to throw that number out there, 877-933-2484. Call with your health question. Again, you can call anonymously if necessary. Hey, Barb, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I am wondering, what is a phobia and what causes it and how can it be treated?
Okay, what is a phobia? I'm going to give you a moment, Dr. Troy, if you don't mind, to think about that, because we probably should pause here for the break. Is that okay?
I'm a little afraid to answer this one.
So sorry. But I'm bum-ching. I didn't see that coming, did you? 877-933-2484. Barb, if you want a follow-up question, you sure can stay on hold. We welcome your questions. You can email as well. I see one that came in regarding antidepressants. We'll tackle that one here from Kim. I got your email. We'll look at that, too, in a minute. Back in just a moment. Tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. It is Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We do this once a month. So honored to have Dr. Troy Spurl in studio with us to give us his time and really invest in your health. And he's passionate about this. So am I. We believe God wants you well. And I'm telling you, as you make the tweaks and adjustments to your health and you trust God to do what you cannot do and you get some wise counsel, the way you show up in your relationships and your everyday life, it will make a huge difference. It just feels better to feel better. We're taking your calls, 877-933-2484. So Barb is still on hold from Madison, and she called in with a question about what is a phobia and how can it be treated? What do you say, Dr. Troy?
Well, phobia is very, very extreme. So we have worries, we have fears, but a phobia is more of an extreme or very irrational fear. And so there are healthcare professionals that are trained that. I'm not trained as a mental healthcare professional. We address the mental side of health, but I'm not a mental healthcare professional. And so we will refer out to a lot of true phobias. Now, first, identifying if it's an actual phobia is important. And so identifying if it's very, very extreme, like it's paralyzing, you can't leave your apartment, or you're stuck at the thought of this, whether it be a snake or a spider, something irrational. We had a person who had a phobia or an extreme irrational fear of hearing that sound when a pickle jar opened up. That's the one that popped to my popped to mind. And so the way we think, number one, we'll refer to healthcare professionals who many times will use medications for that, and that's not my area of expertise, so I'm not going to speak on that part of it, but I want everyone to know that that is the most common, this is one of the most common referrals we do out of our clinic in particular, is for true phobias. But a lot of times if you can get to some of the underlying chemical imbalances and start to work on some of the things that set up the phobia, there's a lot of times a self-limiting belief involved. So either that or just an extreme reaction to just the thought process of it. You have to retrain or reprogram your mind, if you will. So we will still work on the basics. How are the intestines doing? as far as inflammation, because that can decrease serotonin, dopamine. When it comes to phobias, there are some people who are in active fight or flight when they had the irrational thought or fear. And so adrenaline will magnify that. So pulling them out of that adrenal state or calming or relaxing them helps quite a bit. That's why some people who have extreme phobia or fear of flying will have a glass of alcohol before going on the plane, and they're able to do it because the alcohol mimics GABA, which calms down that area of the brain and relaxes, and they're able to handle the flying. So a lot of times we have to balance GABA, which requires balancing cortisol, the stress hormone, insulin, and blood sugar. So if you have phobias just all of a sudden kind of come out of nowhere, a lot of times it's those are the ones that are the easiest to fix because those are problems with GABA.
Hmm.
And so we have to look at blood sugar, what is causing stress other than the irrational fear, and seeing if we can actually do something about those other stressors that have come up.
Boy, interesting. Thank you so much, Barb, for that question. Let's see here. We've got Chris checking in from Madison. He's got a question for you today. Hey, Chris, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, how are you today?
I'm doing fine.
Good. What's your question for Dr. Troy?
Well, probably a lot easier one, I think, than the last one. But I use, cleaning my ear, some of the lower wax out with a Q-tip, and I believe I inadvertently pushed some of it up into my ear. So it's kind of my hearing's a little bit muffled, and I'm wondering if it's something that will just work itself out, or if it's, and then the second part of that, too, like the over-counter wax dissolvers and stuff like that you get at Walgreens or whatever, if that's something that works well.
They could. We have people who've actually used them, and they'll go in. The doctors will go in and remove it if none of those do work. It has the potential of working itself out. The over-the-counter products do work, so it just kind of depends on how far up there it got pushed. So I would encourage you to try some of the over-the-counter stuff, and the doctors will go in, and sometimes they use a little wand there that melts it and pulls it out, and sometimes they'll flush it out. So they have techniques if you can't get it out. But I wouldn't leave it too long as far as because even if you can't quite hear, it's important to actually keep all of our senses going as long as possible. So if we're talking about anything over a couple weeks or a month or so, I would actually go get it.
Yeah, because it even affects all your other systems.
Yep.
if you're having to strain.
It can throw
ear.
Your balance off just
wow.
Eventually too. Mm. So there's a lot of reasons to stay
get
on top
done.
Of it.
Yeah. And you know what? Even if you go to the doctor and they do that syringe thing and they blow your ear out, you will want to hug them after.
Yes.
So Chris, get her done. I'm glad you asked about that. This dear listener wrote in a couple of times and we never could get to her question. Michelle, we'll get to you in a minute here. But she said, what about the person who finds taking a shower to be an unpleasant sensation? So I don't know if the shower is funky on their skin, or I don't know if you've ever heard anything like that.
Yeah. There was a few years back, I was on Fox News for a mystery illness case.
Wow.
And that was one of the symptoms. And it was a young girl who couldn't go outside because the wind blowing on her skin would feel like daggers. Having a
wow.
shower would feel like daggers. So it's a sensory challenge. So we do have the potential for that. And when there's a breakdown, actually, we were talking earlier about a sympathetic regional pain syndrome. That is most likely one of the things that's going on here. And what I'll say is almost always there's something that's stuck that's priming the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight nervous system. It could be a spasm in the intestinal tract. It could be an infection somewhere. It could be an injury to a particular area of the neck in particular or back. So there's other factors needed here. But if there was a car accident and then this happened 6 months later, if they were born with it and has been like that since they can remember, then we'd be looking at something developmental. but something is stuck in a dysfunctional mode, and it's constantly sending a signal, priming the sympathetic nervous system. Because every time we get a sensory experience, it actually reflexively fires that sympathetic nervous system. It's beautiful, actually, because if we get a signal that we're supposed to move our arm, our left arm, it sends a signal to the muscle, but the sympathetics cause the dilation of the blood to go there, so there's more oxygen for the muscle to now use. And so that's how it's normally supposed to work. But if that system is stuck on, then it's kind of like the flow is always going there. And then just think about how water would feel against the skin.
So like a hypersensitivity?
Hypersensitivity. So for us, that's a sensory challenge. And usually that means something is stuck. And it's usually something in the digestive system or an injury, like a trauma. So those would be the two areas. And reflex pain syndrome, usually it's from like soccer players will have problems with their shins because they got kicked very hard there. There was a trauma, and then those nerves never shut down. And so you have to figure out where it's stuck. And then most times you can do something naturally to shut it down or reset it. But the shower one I've actually heard
wow.
a couple times. Not often. That's a unique one. But
yeah.
I've
wow.
heard that one.
Very good. Okay, I'm trying to decide because we're so close to a break here. Who is next? Is it Margaret from Minneapolis? I think what we're going to have to do is get Margaret's question and once again take it on the other side of the break. Hey, Margaret, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yes, I have macular degeneration, and I get that it's the wet kind, and I get shots in my eyes for that. I'd like to know if there are any exercises, foods, supplements, anything that has actually been found to improve eyesight. I do take a carotenoid complex that has 25,000 IU vitamin A. I take gundolutein and zeaxanthin. And another one called Focus Select.
Okay, Margaret, I have to jump in now. We're at a hard break, so I have no other choice. So you hang on, if you would. I see Dr. Troy thinking and nodding and taking notes, so I think he's got enough information here. Michelle, I see you as well. We'll get your question on the other side. Steve had to hang up from Wisconsin. He's got a question about stevia. We're going to grab that, and then the email question about Prozac as well. Some good questions coming in. It's Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We love hearing from you. We'll be back in a minute. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. We're having an active and wonderfully engaged conversation today. It's Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We can never get to all the questions. In fact, I got a big stack right in front of me here. We're never at lack, but we always want to hear from you. If you've got a question about your health, today's the day to call 877-933-2484. So Michelle and Josie on the line, I will get to you. And Kim, by email, I'm getting to you. But Margaret called right before the break and suffers from macular degeneration. And she had questions about her diet, mentioned some of the supplements she's taking. Can you answer her question if possible?
Yeah, it sounds like she's taking a lot of the right supplements. Lutein, xanthine are the two most known antioxidants that help with macular degeneration. Vitamin C, vitamin E, and zinc are also good that way. But I'm going to share a more unknown therapy that we've used with some patients. And this one seems a little counterintuitive at first, but one of the things we found is that a lot of these people are sun sensitive, so they go into wearing their sunglasses, more and more sunglasses or darker glasses. And the reality is, if you start to take your sunglasses off and start to build the muscles up in your eyes by getting more and more sun exposure, that actually helps. And so we found antioxidants are very, very important, so keep taking those. You have to make sure your blood sugar is balanced and as much as possible you're as hydrated, because dry eyes or a dehydrated body will also lead to more challenges just in eyes, eye health.
Wow.
So we want to stay nice and hydrated, but start to look at the sunlight as a therapy for your eyes. Don't stare directly at the sun, but be outside. If you're prone to wearing sunglasses, try, even though it might be a little uncomfortable in the beginning, try and get the eyes built up to tolerating the sun more and more and more, and eventually you won't need sunglasses. I really, really have gotten away from even using sunglasses because
of
that. Once I got into the research on this particular area and I saw it work with some patients. So that part of the program I had never done up until just recently, and it's worked a few times with people, so it's not well known, but it's one of these old time treatments that got from a medical doctor from years back, and
showing
he swears
some,
by it. So yeah.
You know, I've also heard years ago that the morning sun is one of the best ways to raise your serotonin level. So, again, you're not looking directly in the sun, but then it goes to scripture. It talks about rising in the morning to meet him.
Yeah.
Is that true as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And we have all this natural healing all around us if we just slow down and breathe.
Take it in.
Take it in.
So if you're like, especially in our summer and our fall months, if you can be outside in the morning and just the first hours of the morning and read a book and just let the sun kind of get into your eyes, it will automatically raise your serotonin level, which will help your mood. Absolutely amazing. Okay, we've got Michelle checking in from Minneapolis. Hey, Michelle, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, bless your heart for taking my call.
Absolutely. Bless your heart for calling.
There's so many things associated with health. The body and the way Jesus created us is a whole system, body, mind, and soul. I have an adult son who has undergone numerous testing, and I'm not sure if this is a concrete diagnosis, but he's been diagnosed with mast cell syndrome. His problems pertain to his digestion. He cannot consume anything and keep it in. They're telling him he has an antihistamine allergen and have prescribed him with Zantac and steroids. He has missed much work. He is a single father of a 4-year-old, and Preston is his lifeblood, and I can see in 3 years plus that he is extremely beaten down physically, emotionally, and spiritually. I pray incessantly. I'm on the internet constantly looking for clues, looking for answers. Anything that ends in the word syndrome gives me pause for cause. He's been tested for Crohn's, EBS, colon cancer. He's had colonoscopy, throat scope, bacterial tests.
Okay.
Discover some polyp tissue that showed disputable cell assembly, but they relayed that is non-malignant.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here just because we've got other calls piling up, and I think Dr. Troy's probably got a good amount of information now. What do you say to Michelle?
Yeah, that's a tough one. That diagnosis is very, very challenging, and most likely there's usually something else associated with it, eosinophilic esophagitis or something like that, where immune system or the integrity of one of the areas that the immune system protects is broken down. And so the way to think, we have to chunk it down a little bit. The mast cell syndrome, essentially, you're falling into the category of a confused immune system. And whether it be from an allergy, it's a histamine problem, which means mast cells are the cells in our body that release histamine. And so for whatever reason, it's being released when it shouldn't be. And so if you look at what types of things in our world can do that, there's only a few. So you have to treat it like a like a confused immune system, almost like an autoimmune scenario. So hidden infection can cause that. An infection called SIBO, S-I-B-O, Helicobacter pylori. A lot of times the medical community will look for these infections, but sometimes they're a little harder. There's one called Marcon's in the nasal passages, or a tooth infection can actually set up this scenario. So you want to try and identify or look for hidden infection. And then think about other things like allergies as well, looking at what all he might be allergic to. So seeing an allergist who can actually identify what else is triggering histamine release. So allergy to cats, to dogs, to the dander of those, to the environmental trees around us. All of these things become very, very relevant. And then also what is going to help the immune system. The majority, a lot of our immune system lines the digestive tract. So the reason why they think Crohn's and stuff like that is because of the damage to the lining of the digestive tract. So it is something that you can work on and work through. It takes a long time in the functional medicine world, 2 to 5 years, to get on top of it, because you have to find and identify all the different things that potentially could be causing confusion to the immune system, like infection, heavy metals, hormone imbalances, food allergies, stress, mental and physical stressors that are there. So we'll definitely keep them in our prayers, because that is a tough one to be dealt. But I do and can tell you that you just have to keep picking away at it until you slowly get many of the answers.
I pray God would provide what he would need to go see Dr. Troy. I'm just going to say that. I mean, and it takes such a commitment to get your gut healthy again. But I believe there's hope, you know. Pray you don't give up, and may your son not give up as well. All right, Josie, checking in from Minneapolis. Hey, Josie, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, what's your question today?
I was wondering if Dr. Troy has any advice about adult acne and how it might relate to hormonal imbalances and how to deal with that.
Very good. Thanks, Josie.
Yeah, adult acne is something that we're seeing more and more today than our grandparents saw in their time. Hmm. And it has to do a lot with the quality of our food, number one. We don't have as clean a food supply as we used to have. And acne, I want you to think of it this way. There are infections. The traditional dermatologist will treat inflammation or infections on our skin. But there's also a component in functional medicine where if the liver gets backed up and gets overworked, then the lymph system, which brings all of the garbage to the liver, starts to go into a different flow pattern. It starts to back up. And it can come out through the skin itself. And so the hormones in our body, a lot of them are broken down in the liver, metabolized in the liver. And so we see a lot of people who have excessive hormones start to break out with acne. And there are some receptor challenges, some people that are prone to receptor challenges, where if you go on hormones, it can actually improve the acne. But generally speaking, adult onset acne, if you clean up your diet and eat a liver-friendly diet, that can help quite a bit. Down-regulating our estrogen receptors is also very, very important. That's how it works when we are given the hormones. And a lot of the chemicals in our environment mimic estrogen. So when you're exposed to them, your body will actually keep those estrogen receptors elevated. And if your lymph system gets backed up, it can come out as adult-onset acne. So staying hydrated first and foremost, and keeping your digestive system as clean as possible. And when I say liver-friendly diet, that's vegetables first and foremost, veggies, low inflammatory foods like rice versus wheat, and no sugar, coffee, or alcohol. That doesn't mean forever. It just means until things clear up.
Very, very good. Jim, checking in from Duluth. Hey, Jim, thanks for holding.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Dr. Troy, I've had a hard time sleeping for a very long time. Mm. And I've tried to do some of the normal things, like making the atmosphere conducive to sleep and making sure I'm getting, you know, magnesium, that type of thing. I had a couple of sleep studies that showed that I had involuntary leg movements throughout the night. But as of late, it's actually gotten worse. Mm. And I have just a terrible hard time getting to sleep and staying asleep. And so just not sure what next to do. I've tried on 3 or 4 different medications, and none really seem to work real well. So,
well, first of all, Jim, God bless you. That is such a brutal struggle to have. You sound like such a nice guy, and he's still nice, even though he's not sleeping. That says a lot about his character, I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's very
it's
true.
It's brutal not yes. to sleep. And Dr. Troy is a sleep expert, so you're asking the right guy here.
Yeah, this is what my next book is on. And what I'm going to say, there's a lot of variables here, so I'm just going to throw out a few things that are the most common. One of them that is just under the radar is a sleep disorder called upper airway resistance syndrome, so UARS, and it's a REM sleep disorder. And we see the leg movement as part of that. And a lot of times there's a digestive component to it where some type of intestinal inflammation might be present. But it's a weakness of the airway muscles. This is kind of like what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, Susie, where we can do stuff like be working at a keyboard on the computer a lot, and our head is forward. And one of the realities is when our head gets too far forward, the neck muscles get tight, and then they get weak. And at nighttime, there's a moment when we go into deep sleep where everything goes paralyzed. And people will wake up during this state. They call it paralytic dreaming, and they're paralyzed. They feel like they're literally being abducted by aliens or something like that because they can't move. But the reality is their whole body gets shut down, but your airway is meant to be maintained. And if it collapses because it's not getting the right neurologic support...
Because of weakness,
mm-hmm. you temporarily get a lack of oxygen. Now, in sleep apnea, they'll be able to measure it because your oxygen in your fingertips will start to slowly go down. But in upper airway resistance, the brain takes over and sends a signal to your adrenal glands, and you have a fight-or-flight mm-hmm. response instead of a deep sleep response. And it kind of pulls you out of that state to open up the airway, but you don't get deep sleep. And so we end up, our legs jump, we act out our dreams sometimes. Some people will sleepwalk, some people will sleep talk. But we have these different reactions at that time. And so getting that corrected, a chiropractor who does a seated occiput adjustment can correct that. And I know there's a few in Duluth who know how to do that. So a seated occiput adjustment to correct it, or going to see a chiropractor or a physical therapist who works on getting the neck muscles up and back will eventually help with that as well. Now, one of the other things that can cause this type of scenario sleep that's not physical, like upper airway resistance syndrome, is reactive hypoglycemia. So when your blood sugar drops too low, it can cause you to not sleep through the night, so staying asleep. So those are the two most common causes when medications aren't quite working. Reactive hypoglycemia, and then upper airway resistance syndrome. And we just found dentists can make a device to kind of push the jaw forward. I even saw one on TV being marketed recently that pushed the jaw forward, and that will help with upper airway resistance syndrome. The long-term solution is getting the actual muscles balanced in the neck, because there's a reason why that got set up. And today with the computer age and everything, we just are seeing it more and more and more. So that's one of the reasons why I'm writing the book.
Yeah, boy, that's a great question. So glad that you called, and I pray God totally restores your sleep. So do some of those wall angels. See if you can find that mouth guard. Get to that chiro in Duluth who can make that adjustment for you and see if that doesn't help with you. I pray God's best. Laura, I know that you probably can't hold to the other side of the break. I'm going to look. I think I have your question lined up here. So if you need to hang up and listen, you sure can do that, but we have to take a break now. I've got probably time for just a few more questions. We will be back in a moment. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Having a great conversation with Dr. Troy. I'm telling you, these conversations fly by, and we so appreciate your thoughtful questions. We've got just a little bit of time, so I see the calls on queue. We'll probably only have time to take those. Lori's been holding, checking in from Minneapolis. Hey, Lori, you're on with Dr. Troy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a daughter in her mid-30s, roughly, and she has got 3 children under 4, so she's somewhat sleep deprived, but about 2 weeks ago, she ended up losing her voice. And then it went into some mild cold things, and then she ended up getting a major migraine. And after the migraine a week ago, her speech was very slurred, and it's been slurred since. So she went in and had an MRI and CT scan to make sure it wasn't anything in the brain, and that came back fine, but they can't figure out what's going on, and her speech is still very slurred. If she focuses really hard, she can enunciate the words properly, but otherwise it's not changing.
Okay, so I'm assuming here that they checked blood sugar as well, as far as just normal labs are concerned?
They did. They ran a full lab work. I don't have everything here, but they checked for Lyme disease. They checked for mono. But then she ended up having strep. So strep, she got called back 2 days later that strep was positive. But otherwise, everything else they said looked okay.
Yeah, so with that scenario, there's a lot of factors here, because it sounds like they ruled out stroke, which is good, and because we can even have these little ischemic events, which migraines can be. So the thing to look at is there's a weird scenario that can occur. So if they can't figure out what it is, that's a good sign, because the doctors here in the United States, and the Twin Cities in particular, are just so good at finding the severe problems, the life-threatening problems. I mean, they really are gifted at that. We have the best emergency room services in the world. And so they're very, very good at that part of it. So if they can't find what they're looking for, there's one scenario where when we get strep, it can affect an intestinal inflammatory disorder towards the distal end of the small intestine. What happens is you get a spasm there, and then that will cause a reflexive irritation to an area of the brain called the cerebellum. Now, the cerebellum is that's where our muscle memory is. And if she's sleep deprived with the girls and is not over this infection and intestinal problem, it can manifest in slowness of movement, speech. So if she, just to the right of the belly button, if there is any type of significant pain or problem there, that's probably what we're dealing with. And that may go away all by itself. And if she actually puts a little pressure there, or if she's backed up or has any bowel irregularities with this, fixing the bowel irregularities and problems will actually help with the brain side of this. This is a complicated scenario otherwise. So something like that, if blood sugar truly is good, then working on the infection is going to be very, very important. Sinus infections can also set up the same response to that same area of the brain. So clearing out the infection, making sure the digestive component is corrected is where I'd start. Beyond that, there would be some problem solving needed, but you can almost take to the bank that it's nothing life-threatening if the traditional medical model is not able to find a root cause for that. So then it would fall into the functional world, and there'd just be a little bit of digging into it that would be needed to be done there.
Hmm. Thank you so much for that call. We've got Kyle checking in from Coon Rapids. Hey, Kyle, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. How are you today?
Doing pretty good.
We are running up to the hard end of the show, so I want you to have time to have Dr. Troy answer your question, so it has to be kind of short. Can you give him your question?
Okay. My question is, where can I get some good treatment for this mixed mold toxicosis? I did an air test. I've got 3 types of mold poisoning, and my family doctor just teases me. Other doctors disregard it. I did find a good doctor, but he's leaving the trade and going to switch. So I need to find a good doctor and get over this.
Okay.
There is. I will give you the name of a great medical doctor. She is down in Burnsville, though, Burnsville area, Egan area. Dr. Zeniker, if she's unable to see you, she may have a good referral for you. But if you call her office, Dr. Zanker, I've sent a few of my patients over, mold patients, and she has done a fantastic job with them. So, and she's very, very intelligent and has a kind heart at the same time. So she does a great job with this type of treatment. She's very hard to get into, as are many of the good doctors, but she will, her office will be available for you to maybe get a referral if she's unable to see you. And she may have some other colleagues that can help with you with that as well.
Thanks for that call. We're going to squeeze one last call in here. Teresa's checking in from West Fargo with a great question. Hey, Teresa, you're on the air, and we're literally watching the minutes crawl by here, but or whip by, I should say. What's your question for Dr. Troy?
Well, I thought I was going to a chiropractor in Minnesota, and then after watching him for about 40 minutes, I found out it wasn't chiropractor, it was kinesiology. So what did I witness? Can you explain
what happened? Yes. Well, a lot of chiropractors do kinesiology, and so there's applied kinesiology, which basically means they test a bunch of muscles, and there's different levels of practitioner there as far as different – many people are trained in it, and it's a valid technique. It's one that I've used and taught myself. A lot of questions I get from my Christian patients is – they're concerned about source. And all I can tell you is that the gentleman, the doctor who developed the technique, it's a scientific technique. There's nothing in the pure technique that is not that you have to be aware of. But the practitioner, you do have to use discernment there as far as what they bring into it. It 100% is a technique where you have to trust the practitioner. So there's a lot of potentially good information there. When done properly, people, kinesiologists, will not diagnose from a muscle test but help lead them to the proper diagnosis with other collaborative testing. So when done properly, it's a good tool in the toolbox, but it can also be misused like any other technique.
Mm. Wow, and thank you so much for this. And we didn't get to Kim's question about Prozac. We're going to have to save that for next time. And we're going to pause here and wrap and pray. I'm going to just pray. I'm going to pray a blessing, if I can, on Dr. Troy and his practice and on you, that you would find next answers. And truly, if you missed First Hour, I want you to go back and listen when we get that podcast up, because there's something there for each and every one of us, something we can tackle and with God's grace and see an improvement in our health and our well-being. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for the freedom to gather as we do without fear for our lives. And we do remember our persecuted brothers and sisters who have to gather under the dark of night and risk their lives just because they love you. And we're so blessed in so many ways. Help us to be a more grateful people and count the many blessings. Help us to taste our food, as Dr. Troy is saying, and be present with those that we love. And I pray now a special blessing on Dr. Troy and his precious family and his amazing staff. I ask you to energize them, strengthen them, bless them in their own life rhythm so that they can be sustained in this growing, growing, amazing practice. And we thank you, God, for making a way where there is no way. I ask you to heal my friend listening today. Show them what needs to go, what you want them to do so that they can enjoy a flourishing life. We love you, Lord, and we say thank you. In your name we pray. Amen. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise, and I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. I'm telling you what, I want you to be a radio missionary. When that first hour gets up, share it with your friends, because each and every one of us have adjustments we can make that will serve us well in the end. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He is the one who will keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.